Trust for Sustainable Living presents Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast about the environment and the issues our planet faces. Today, we'll be talking to Ingrid Henries as part of our mini-series on green jobs. Today's episode is hosted by James Myers.
It's my pleasure to welcome today to the podcast Ingrid Henries. Ingrid is based in the Gambia since 2021, where she was for the past year the in-country project coordinator for WasteAid, delivering circular economy solutions in the waste management sector. Ingrid is now working as an independent consultant. She has a master's degree in international agro-development engineering and a master's degree in tropical area biodiversity and conservation. Ingrid also took a permaculture design course in California. She was the head of the National Sanitation Department in Haiti for over 2 years, before having experience with international NGOs. She has also been the scientific and technical coordinator of the Makaya National Natural Park between 2014 and 2017, and the program director for the Society Audubon Haiti that manages the Grand Bois National Park. Ingrid, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James.
I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about your background and the work that you do and what motivated you to it.
Okay, thank you. Well, about my background, since I was quite young, I wanted to be a landscaper, an architect landscaper. Until when I started my studies, I studied in France. First, I started in a two-year study. It was like a bit about not exactly landscaping, but a two-year to prepare for entering a landscaping class. And then I realized that maybe as a landscaper, I wouldn't be able to work in Haiti because this is my origin country. So at some point I was a bit, okay, what am I going to do? I want to do something with the environment, but not really knowing what to do. Until I found this school of agro development engineers. That was, by this time, it was a four-year program that then became a five-year program. So I decided, okay, this is it. This is exactly what I want to do. So I entered that school, which was pretty interesting because it wasn't like the type of engineering school like we can understand that it's really focused on a specific subject, but it was a type of engineering in the sense that you touch a lot of subjects. It is really broad, so you're able to work with different career people. And also every year we would have training periods in different developing countries or different countries. Only the first one was in a developing country. So that was my background. That's what I did. And right after that, I went back to Haiti and started working at the head of sanitation because my last training period was in Burkina Faso, where I work on ecological sanitation. So dry toilets, especially in urban areas, and how to mix this with urban agriculture. So it was like really a passion for me. And I started working like this in Haiti because there was nobody, the unit for water and sanitation was quite new. And in Haiti, we don't have studies on sanitation. So they didn't have anybody for sanitation. So they were quite pleased to have me wanting to join on board. And later it became the National Direction for Water and Sanitation. So I worked there and really trying to introduce the concept of ecological sanitation at the level of the nation, which was a bit complicated because people were always seeing me like, okay, she studied abroad and she has those ideas, but it's not really, let her do her things and it's not really what we really wanted to do. But it was pretty challenging and interesting because I participated in the design of the first sewage plant for the country. And that was right before the 2010 cholera, the earthquake and then the cholera outbreak. So a lot of this. And then after, I really wanted to have more experience in the rural area, like really being in the field, because this national direction was becoming the regulator for water and sanitation in the country. So my idea was, okay, I go have more experience in the country before being like doing the laws and all the regulation for sanitation. So this is when I started to have other experience with non-governmental organizations and working with farmers associations, working more in environment. But at the moment when I was ready to come back to the National Direction for Water and Sanitation, they were not ready to have me back. So at some point, other opportunities came and I could work with the ministry, for the Ministry of Environment, in a project on the Makaya National Natural Park, which is one of our most important national parks in the country. And that is also almost a sacred place, a biodiversity hotspot, but very endangered because it's like, it's a bit a mix. People are living in the park, but we are trying to protect it. So it's really to find the balance between how we work with the people and how we work to protect the biodiversity and conservation of this area. So this is from then that I decided that I wanted to do another master degree, more specific on tropical biodiversity and its conservation. So I went to Spain for 2 years. Well, it can be weird to do it in Spain because this program was first in Ecuador. And then that year they had moved it to Spain because of other logistic issues. But at some point, part of it was also happening in Costa Rica. So we were in Spain and part of it was happening in Costa Rica. So after that, went back to Haiti in 2019 and started working with Audubon Society and Haiti National Trust, where they had purchased part of the Grand-Bois National Park, which is also a biodiversity hotspot, and trying to work on this on the South Peninsula. This is mostly my background. Yes, in the, as you mentioned, the Permaculture Designer Certificate, I did that in the middle in 2014, because I was always really still interested in kind of landscaping issues, but how to really link this with my work, with what I was doing, to see really how those could come together.
That's fascinating. Really interesting background and connection between the work that you did with the sanitation and then with the national park. What connections were there between those two different areas you were dealing with in terms of the types of issues you would deal with on the sanitation front versus the issues you were dealing with in tropical biodiversity in the national park? And what sort of connections were there in the skills or the different types of people that you worked with in those different areas?
Well, let's say both, they have to see with environment protection. Because when we were talking about sanitation, the big sanitation issues in Haiti, like I said, we were working on the first design of the designer of the first sewage treatment plant in 2010. So we didn't have a sewage plant. So it was really the way sanitation was managed in Haiti was the threat to the environment. And when we were talking about the national park, the biodiversity, it was also a threat for the environment because some species were really endangered, some species were going extinct, but it was also the way of, when we talk about biodiversity, it's not only the tree species, the fauna and flora, but it's also the people. We are also part of the biodiversity. So it was also really, how do we manage people's health, people's needs, and protecting the environment? So both, you look at the aspect of sanitation. Yes, we are all human beings. We are all producing excretas. So we need to treat them. We need to make sure that we live in a clean environment. So same thing when we go into the park, people have needs. They need to take some resources from the parks. But we also need to protect the park and the environment because the park is providing for us. So it was maybe the link that I could make on how to balance those things and really how to work and live better with nature, in harmony with the nature.
Interesting. And over your career and the different roles that you've played, what sort of difference in attitudes have you seen, you know, developing over time? So you work a lot with people, you said, and I guess it's the attitudes of the people that make a lot of difference in these things. And so I'm just wondering what sort of changes in the attitudes of people have you seen? And then also in terms of the non-governmental organizations that you worked with, how have their attitudes changed over time?
It's a bit hard to tell. I can say that at some point, yes, I would say if we look at sanitation, people were becoming a bit more open about it. By the time I started working in Haiti in 2008, there was already an organization doing ecological sanitation. They had started in 2006 in an area in the north, but they were really working in a slum. At first, of course, people were not at all open to this. They were like very reluctant to use those type of toilets. But in the slum, people didn't have any choice. They couldn't have any other type of toilet. It was really houses very close to each other in a very poor area. So at some point, when the activities started to develop into other neighborhoods, especially after the earthquake, when we were looking for solutions because people were living in camps where sanitation was a big issue. So in some camps, they decided to introduce that type of sanitation, that type of toilet, where the treatment was being off-site. So people were getting a bit more open to it. And the organization also could develop itself in having a laboratory where all the compost would be tested to see that, to make sure we kill all the pathogens and to make sure to tell people when the compost is ready, what is the content in terms of nutrients of the compost. So people started being more open to this type of sanitation. Although what we are still facing is that some people use this type of sanitation, but when their incomes become higher or when they move to other, let's say, wealthier neighborhoods, they tend to transfer to another type of sanitation, like septic tanks or flush toilets, and not using the dry toilets anymore. Even if when they were in poor areas, it was really something about dignity, having this type of toilet. But this is the thing. But I think now I've seen the change, especially in the government, because at first when we were doing this in the government, when I did push to have ecological sanitation in the national strategy, people were not really open to this. They were not really seeing it as an opportunity for the future and something for Haiti. But now I know that the National Direction for Water and Sanitation is really backing up this organization and other organizations who want to do ecological sanitation. And they are really pushing for this, even putting too much pressure on one organization to take over other neighborhoods and other cities. So yeah, so I could see changes like this. Also NGOs wanting to work more like hand in hand with the government, because there is this tendency in Haiti, and we have seen it a lot after the earthquake also, where some organizations, international organizations, would come and wanting to do things on their way, on their side, and not really working with the government because for different reasons, lack of trust or whatever. But now I think this had changed because they could see that there is a direction that is really into different things and into pushing things and knowing better. So they started to work better. For the people, when we talk about environment, when we talk about the park, it is more difficult because they always had this idea, because this park was created in 1983. So for them, they always had this idea that scientists came, created this park in order to just protect some frogs, some flowers, some bats, and not caring about them. So sometimes they would be very angry and feel like, we the people, we are not considered, we are not counted for. And because at first the park was smaller and then the area was extended where there were more communities, so they were suddenly being part of the park and being told that there are some activities they cannot no longer do in the park. There are some activities that are completely forbidden, but for them, without giving them immediate alternatives. So they were really angry about it. So for them, they felt like, yes, the park is their life. It's there to protect them, but it's also a threat because they felt like their lives were less worthy than the life of a very rare species of frog. So those attitudes, it's a bit more difficult to change, to really work. And the first projects on the park, the first fundings we had, were not that much focusing on working with the people, like having them involved in all the decisions making and all the management of the park. And now with the social political situation, it's even worse.
It's interesting. You mentioned a number of challenges there about the type of work that you do and the way people perceive that, I guess, especially as you mentioned, I guess it sounds more like people are naturally maybe focused more on the short-term needs that they have. How are they going to live tomorrow and next week? Whereas the work that you do is maybe more long-term, right? It's addressing the long-term health of the ecological systems. And so you mentioned this tension, I guess, as people, you know, how do you get people on side with your long-term goals? You mentioned involving people in the processes. I'm wondering, in your experience, what the best way is to get people on side with these long-term maintaining biodiversity, maintaining the health of a system kind of work. What's the best way of getting people on side or interested with that and participating in that? And I'm wondering, too, how young people react to that in terms of, is the approach to young people different in terms of the way you get them involved and interested in your work?
Interesting question. I don't think I have really the solution for this, but I think from what I've seen in my experience, what worked most is like really to get people to trust what we're doing, because at some point when they feel that it's just a project, yes, with a short funding, so we just have goals we need to target, we have milestones, they don't feel any trust in this. They know that people will spend the money, do whatever they do, and which is really a challenge. And if I take, again, the example of this other organization working in ecological sanitation in the north, as it's not like project funded, even if they rely on external funding, but they have been there living with the people also for several years since 2006. And so this helped build a lot of trust. So at some point when people were saying, okay, they are there to stay and they really care about us, this managed to shift the relationship that people had with them, and people were being trusting them more. And they managed to really hire people, have people working with them, and not based on their diplomas or the skills they already had. So really hiring people from the community. So for me, this is an example that really the youth, because some people started young, working with them and knowing how it works, and they could move and get other position in the organization. So when it's like this, people feel more, let's say, valued, more important, and more taken into consideration. Whereas when we were talking about biodiversity, the way we are still doing it in Haiti is not a way of really co-management, of having people involved really since the beginning and making sure. And also because we didn't manage yet to have the park funded by the government and not by external funding and projects. So it's really people know, okay, this is there for 5 years, maximum 3 years, 5 years, and after, it's what we, there might be a gap. And when there is a gap, so it's like when there is a gap, there is a lot of deforestation, the work doesn't continue. And because Haiti is a very poor country, and with all the what we've been facing those past decades, I can say, people are getting poorer and poorer. There is a lot of more unrest. So for the people, seeing a longer future is harder. You can have young people saying, I know that the way the country is going now with all this violence, I might not get to be 60 or something like that. So when it's like this, it's harder to work with people in making them and getting them involved in a longer term project, in a longer term idea about protecting the environment. So I think I would say one of the first thing for a country, whatever the country is, it's maybe the political stability that can help to really work with people. Although I can see that some other countries, for example, if I take the Gambia, it's more politically stable, but it's also very challenging to work towards environmental protection and waste management like we're trying to do here. But also they had the 22-year dictatorship until 2017. So they are still trying to find their balance towards democracy and all those things. So it looks politically stable, but it's not that stable, I would say. So yeah, I think that would be the thing. You need that stability. You need people to get into trusting you and seeing that you are there to stay. You have a longer project and you really take into consideration their needs. You really take them into consideration and make them part of what you want to do.
Trust, that's a very key word, I think, that you touched on, that need for trust. And I wonder if, you know, young people, especially if they're interested in the field that you're you know, or the different fields that you've pursued in your career, if they're interested and they want to be part of that system of developing trust, what's the best path, do you think, for a young person entering your field or the careers paths that you followed? What's the best path, do you think, for them to follow now in terms of the education that they would get and in terms of maybe some technological skills that they might develop?
That's a good question. The best path. First of all, I don't think there is an ideal path towards this. You can get to this trust and working in environment going through different paths. But I think it's important to take time and not rush, because when we see our systems, like when we are even in primary school, we are being asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's hard to know. Even when you finish high school, we're not that mature enough to know exactly what we want to be when we will be older. So I think it's important to take the time to explore what's happening elsewhere, what other people are doing, and what's there, in which way, which path you can take, and not going like, okay, this is what I have to do, this is what I have to do. Because if I take my own pathway, I think I was 14 when I decided I wanted to be a landscaper. And for me, it was just that, I wanted to be a landscaper. And then it has changed a lot. And I wouldn't say that I'm a specialist in something. I think it's important to keep an open mind and not try to specialize in something, but being open to touch different skills. I think it's important to have like different skills and having different aspects and understanding different aspects and not trying to close oneself in only one specific area and one specific field and trying to be an expert. Because an expert would be somebody that knows everything about a field and doesn't need to learn any more about it. And I think it's not the point of being an expert. It's more to be open about, okay, I need a little bit of this, I need a little bit of that. And always keep being open to learning, never stop learning. Whatever we do, especially if we are working with nature, working with the environment, nature is ever evolving. So we cannot say, okay, I know this for now and I don't need to know more about it. It's just like this, it's gonna stay like this. No, we need to stay open and observing and seeing how things are. Like we do in permaculture. The first thing we do in permaculture is really to observe. You go to a space, you want to do a design. You don't just come with what you have in your mind, what you learn, and you wanna do this design. You observe the patterns. You observe how nature works, how it is in this season, if you're in country with different seasons, how it's gonna be, what are the different patterns before saying, okay, this is what I'm gonna do. And you know that the design I will do or the design you will do, they will be different, but they will all be good. There is not the perfect design. There is no perfection. So I think in terms of technology, now there are so different technologies. Me, at some point, I felt that in my work, knowing more about mapping, how to work with a drone, for example, would be needed in a park, because sometimes you would need the drone to have the map and see better which area to protect and how things are developing, especially when we talk about Haiti, which is very mountainous. So to get to a point in the park to another one, it can take different, depending on how your physical state, it can take you 8 hours, 5 hours for another person. So sometimes working with a drone or something like that would be very interesting. Those are the technologies that we can use a lot if we are working in an environment. Of course, knowing how to use a GPS, knowing how to use those technologies that really can help us to save some time. But somebody could also do it working with somebody who specializes in this. Us, at some point, working in the park, National Park Gamboa, we were working with someone that was specialized in drones and making maps with drones. So we would go with him, we would tell him exactly what we want, and he would help us with this. He was good at this, and he was really interested in what he's doing. So none of us did go and learn how to use a drone for ourselves. So he would come with his own drones. Yeah, I think that's what I can think about now regarding technology and the different path people can take.
That's really interesting. And certainly, as you say, taking that time to observe and to explore different areas, I think that that was my own experience in my education. I never planned to be what I do now, but it's you just kind of wind up doing these things because you observe things over time and you decide that there's one path that's particularly suited to you and connections with people, I guess, that make it really interesting to pursue a particular path. So I wanted to ask about mentoring. Did you have, in your own career development, did you have any particular people that you connected with as mentors who helped you to understand the way the field was changing or to introduce you to those people that you worked with? You know, for example, if you're working with people who know a particular area of technology, I mean, how do you get introduced to those people? And how do you find somebody who really, you know, guides you in your development?
So about mentoring, for me, it was random to find people, but I would say that it's also to stay open and curious when meeting other people and being open and into networking and connecting to people and talking about what we want. Because sometimes we can be a bit shy of talking about what we want to do in life, what we want in the future, but talking to the right people can help connect with other people. So for me, it was like this randomly that I met other people that would be of some inspiration for me or help me in my path. Got connected to them through other friends and opportunities that came like this. For example, when I decided to do my second master's degree in biodiversity, I wasn't thinking about this at first. First, it was an opportunity within my work to go for a course in Peru for a week about biodiversity monitoring. And by the end of the week, and I got seeing what people were presenting, their work and all those things, I got so passionate. I said, well, this is something I want to be like them. I want to study something like this. And asking them, where did they study, what they did do. And I started doing some research, and my thing was I really wanted to do something in Costa Rica. So it was a bit like this, that this path opened for me. Because before that, I never met anybody who did any master's degree in tropical biodiversity, because we don't have that in Haiti. And in Haiti, if I'm not mistaken, we are only two or three biologists, at least two that are working, but the third one is not working as a biologist anymore. So it's really to be really open and really curious about what other people are doing and seeing what. And also, when I talk about being open, it's not only talking about people, but now we have access, a lot of access to internet wherever we are in the world. So reading about all those things, doing some research about those things, really help to get those connections and helping in meeting the right people, the mentors. And once somebody sees that you're interested in their field, that you want to know more about something, they will open up and let you know and guide you towards where you want to go. So that was the same thing for me when I was interested in permaculture and trying to do a designer certificate online, which was a bit challenging because you have to really understand the concept, do your designs. And when you're alone facing your laptop doing it, it's not the same thing as being 10 days with other people and visiting the spaces and seeing things and touching things. So at some point I got introduced to somebody who has a center in California, is a biologist, and they came to Haiti because they connected with my friends in another permaculture course in Cuba, and they came to Haiti to see what we were doing in ecological sanitation. So this is how we connected, we met. And after, they said they have this center in California and they managed to help me. And I went there, did the class, which really opened a lot of doors for me, meeting other people, seeing exactly how things were being done. And I'm very grateful for that. And he's still a good friend with his center. So this is really, the way I see that things work in terms of mentoring and being guided towards one's path.
And it's interesting how technology is really, as you mentioned, allowing us now to connect through the internet across nations, you know, whereas previously it would have been very limited in terms of connections, you know, if you mentioned, I think you said that there was only two biologists in Haiti, for example. Well, now I guess we have the world at our fingertips through the internet, but it still is, as you said, I think important to connect with people in person. And I was wondering, have you mentored any younger people in terms of their career paths? If you have, what sort of interests are you finding, or what sort of questions or issues do you find that younger people are having?
It's only now that I'm starting to do this in the Gambia. I didn't do it in Haiti. So now I don't have questions yet, because it's going to be at the end of the month that I will be doing a training more focused on composting for a job fair that I think is the second time they are doing it. So it's really for the youth they will have training opportunities, employment opportunities, and some hands-on training. So I didn't have that experience in Haiti about really mentoring and guiding younger people.
I guess certainly in terms of setting up the whole sanitation program in Haiti, it would be, maybe it's a case of mentoring each other in terms of if it's something that's really new, that's just being developed, everybody has to learn at the same time.
Yeah, it was a bit like this. We were learning at the same time. Yeah. And through books and spending a lot of time when we were working on the design of the sewage plant with my colleagues, it was like working during the weekend and trying the best design with the other things. So it was a bit about also getting out of your comfort zone. Okay, I never did this, but let's try this, let's trust this, and the team working together. So it was, yeah, we would say that mentoring each other, really trusting each other and pushing each other to our best.
And trial and error, I guess, is always a key thing to consider. And the more people work together, I guess, in that sort of thing, the more that they'll discover and observe. You mentioned technology, and I wondered, in terms of the changes in technology over time, is there one particular technology that you see as being particularly helpful, either now or in the future, in the goal of biodiversity, for example, or in the goal of helping people to understand the long-term implications or to deal with the long-term implications? Is there one particular technology that has you really kind of excited about its potential in your field?
Well, in my field, when I was working on my thesis for my master's degree in tropical biodiversity, we were using this program called MaxSense that I didn't know before. So that helped you to do some models about how me, I was working on a particular species in Haiti, seeing to do modeling how it would evolve in different years. You can connect it like to the weather, like the heat or different aspects. For me, it was something really interesting, because when you do those type of modeling, this really with those maps, with those models, you can really show to people, okay, if things stay like this, this is what's going to happen in 10 years, 15 years. This is how it was, well, how we can say it was a century ago. And really helping people to, especially decision makers, policy makers, when you show them, okay, this national park, we need to protect this species, it is the emblematic species of the park. If we don't act, or if things stay like this, what is going to happen? I think for me, it was a really those type of technologies, modeling technologies, that are really helpful when we talk about biodiversity protection, working in biodiversity. I believe there are others that I don't know, but for me, that was really one of the things that I really used this program that I found very, very useful, and that can help you spread the word out and talk to other people that are not really familiar with the field.
That makes sense in terms of especially the complexity that is involved in some of these longer term issues. The idea of needing to model that and to see what all of the different effects could have, especially when everything comes together. Yeah, I can imagine that there's a lot of information to be had from modeling. And as you say, something that is particularly effective, I guess, when used with decision makers.
Yes.
That's really interesting. And so I wonder if there are any particular learning opportunities that you encountered in your career, or any particular problems that you faced, maybe something that didn't turn out well that you learned from, just maybe as an example of how people can learn from that trial and error process? Any particular examples of a learning opportunity that you encountered where you came out of it and you realized things were different than you had thought before?
Yes. Let's if I take the example of when I was still the head of sanitation in Haiti, and when we came with that design and we were working on this sewage plant, we didn't want to have like the conventional sewage plant. We wanted something more adapted to Haiti, and we designed the different ponds and the treatment and the type of a lab on site and the water to make sure that the liquids will be of a quality that could be used in agriculture. So we were working on this, and it was almost 80% finished. But at some point, there was a political aspect that got in it, and we got a bit stopped in the work that we were doing. So people were saying that what we were doing wouldn't be environmentally correct, that the liquids that we would be releasing in the environment would be dangerous. So at some point we had to stop. And for me, it was really like, I felt it like a failure. And I felt it like, a failure in being disappointed that politics could just stop something you are doing for your country and something that can be, you feel that it's really needed and useful for your country. But at some point after several months, when I was not working there anymore, they continued with it. They really realized the importance of it. So they developed that site. And after a while, it was being used with a lot of challenges still. But at some point, this did show me that when you have everything correctly done, because we could explain to people exactly how it would work, what would be the different steps in it, and what would be the result, what we would be releasing. So people would see those who came to visit and saying that what we were doing were not correct. And which saying that it's not correct when you compare to what was being done before, that trucks were just emptying septic tanks or the soakaways and releasing them in the environment. So at some point it showed that, okay, taking time and stepping back and letting people sit with it and understand, because we are coming with something new and people were not, let's say, not ready for it, or they didn't want it, or for a different reason. And at some point, yet it got accepted, and now in the metropolitan area around Port-au-Prince, the capital, we have two sewage plants. I don't know if they are being in use now, but they are from this design we did in 2010. So yeah, that was a challenge, but showing that, okay, there is a way we can move forward. And also the challenge of working with ecological sanitation, that at first people were a bit reluctant. Why would we use this type of toilet or the compost coming from those toilets? People were reluctant of using it, saying this is from human excreta. But at the end, with patients, when people would touch the compost and feel it and try to use it and see that, no, it doesn't have anything to see with your excreta that you had at first. And there is a good thing. So people were more open and started using it. Farmers coming to get it, to buy it, other projects buying it. So really showing, okay, from this challenge, if we had stopped by saying, okay, people are not ready for it, we wouldn't do anything. At some point, it's important to try and take time to explain to people and let them go at their own rhythm to get to it. Because this is the same thing I am facing here in the Gambia, where I want to introduce those type of toilets. People are telling me, Gambians are not ready for this. Gambians are not ready for this. So I'm just taking my time, going step by step, doing it at home with that type of toilet. My first compost will be ready in a month. And after going step by step like this, but we know that we cannot just go and put it on the people, even though if here it's the same thing as in Haiti, open defecation, sanitation system not efficient, but we have to take our time.
I can see the barrier in terms of people accepting new things, new ideas, new technologies, and the political problems I think that you mentioned are the challenges in getting the decision makers on side. Is there an economic challenge to your work in terms of the costs that some of these measures take, and you know, if there is poverty, if the national budget can't afford some of these measures, to what extent do the economic challenges affect your work? And is there a way, do you think, of addressing that? Or is technology helping to address the cost or to reduce the cost of implementing some of these beneficial measures?
I would say yes, technology helps with those measures. I don't think it's really the economic aspect that is a problem, because when we talk about the type of toilets we are using, for example, in ecological sanitation, it's not the fancy toilet. It's a container-based sanitation with a simple bucket. We are using sawdust. We are covering with a simple toilet. So those toilets, after manufacturing, they cost about $12 each. That's the price we can get for it now in Haiti. So it's not really the economic cost. It's really the acceptance that is the problem. It's really the culture and coming with a new thing and what people think about it. It's really, you always have to be telling the right message, correcting the message. Like at some point, people were not understanding what we were doing in Haiti, and somebody, a journalist, went on saying that there is an organization in Haiti that is taking Haitian's excreta and selling it to the U.S. So people were like, what? So we had to get another journalist to come and visit the composting site, seeing all the steps and explaining exactly what is happening. And nothing is being sold to the U.S. or something like that. So it's not really, I don't think it's really, yes, it's a poor country. And I would even say that as a poor country, and as at first we were working with poor people, the acceptance was easier, because in the slum where we started working, people couldn't afford any other type of sanitation, and they didn't have space for other type of sanitation. So it was more, okay, better this than just going on with open defecation. Yeah, it's not really the, for me, in my experience, it's not really the economic aspect that can be the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned communication, which I think we see examples of so many problems centering around communication, and certainly the importance of making sure that communication is clear and that the right message is being sent, and that people don't get a wrong idea from somebody who makes a mistake or somebody who deliberately tries to deliver the wrong message. It's interesting to think too about how the non-governmental organizations that you mentioned, I think near the beginning of our discussion, how they're involved in the communication process. And I wonder too, if you have any thoughts about young people who are interested in getting involved in these non-governmental organizations based on your experience with the NGOs. I assume these NGOs, a lot of them work around the world. Some of them perhaps work just with specific countries. But I'm just wondering what sort of experience you had with young people particularly and their involvement with NGOs. And if somebody is interested in pursuing a path through NGOs, is there any particular advice or experience that you've had that would be of interest?
Well, I think it depends of the NGO, of the type of work the NGO is doing. I think big international NGOs, they will be more, they will require more about diplomas and skills and things like this. And an NGO like the one I'm talking about, working in ecological sanitation, soil, they only work in Haiti. So their activities is focused on Haiti, on the north of Haiti and Port-au-Prince. So for them, it's different. And because they have been there for so many years, and as I was saying, they build this trust with the community. So working with an NGO like this, it's easier for a young person to enter this. And usually the young people we have working with us, it's about passion. And for them, it's about doing something and showing that you can be working in sanitation or you can be working directly with excreta, but having a dignified job. And it's not something about like the manual scavengers doing something like this. So some of them didn't have any diploma at all, any degree at all when they started. So, and they got trained and they have been there for many years, and they are really proud of their work they're doing. Their families are proud of them. So it's a different path than if you want to work with an international NGOs. Like in my experiences with international NGOs, of course, you have to have more experience. You have to be well educated. They are asking you a lot more skills to work with them. And sometimes they even ask you, even in Haiti, to speak foreign languages because some of their teams are not local. They don't speak the local languages. So it's really different. I would say it's really different what somebody wants to do, what is the objective of the person, what's the career objective, but there are different type of NGOs, like local ones, international ones, and different ways of working with an NGO.
And it's interesting, as you mentioned, the on-the-job learning aspect of it, I guess, is important as much as perhaps learning for in a specific educational path. The getting that actual hands-on learning experience, I guess, through the NGOs is valuable too. I wonder if in your youth, whether you had a particular sustainability hero, somebody who really inspired you in the objective of getting into a career that was meant to help the sustainability of the environment. Is there any particular hero or person who inspired you in that sort of role?
When I was younger, I wouldn't say that there was a particular sustainability hero. I would say that my parents were a bit like heroes for me, even if they were not working in the environment. My dad is a medical doctor. My mother was a lab technician. But the way they were going in life, and like they studied abroad also, and when they came back to Haiti, they were more like thinking about developing health in the country. So they opened a health center in the central plateau of Haiti. But with the idea that if health is better, if we develop health, that will develop a lot of things in the country. So they went to the central plateau where there was no health center. So they were there, it's in a remote area working there. So I think their vision, so they created an NGO. So their vision of life and the way they were working, the way they were valuing people in all aspects, I think I would say that I got inspired by the type of work they were doing, although they were not involved in environment and I didn't want to be in the medical or health aspect of things, although I am now a lot interested in herbal medicine and all the herbs that we can use. But it's later in my life that I met someone that I could consider as a sustainability hero for me. So it was really later on when I already started my career. So it was this guy I was talking about, who is this biologist, Brock Dolman, who's in California, who has this Occidental Arts and Ecological Center, where he's really a passionate person. It's really, you spend some time with him, it gets his passion and all the way he reads nature, the way he reads the patterns. It's the type of person who went to the Congress with a suit that's disguised as a beaver because he was fighting to protect the beavers. So he's this type of bold person who would go and do things like this. And for me, he's really a sustainability hero and a person that doesn't give up after so many years what he has done in Occidental. Occidental is quite small in Sonoma County, in terms of the water and bringing back the biodiversity, taking the time and really monitoring every year what the butterflies, the birds, and all those things that are happening. So for me, yeah, he's the one who I would say that is a sustainability hero for me.
It's interesting. I imagine somebody dressed up as a beaver and how that could be quite an attraction, I guess, in terms of demonstrating that passion that you talked about that's so important in developing one's career objectives. So really interesting example of how one person can motivate another person. Certainly passion, I think, as you said, is the key word there. So I wanted to thank you very much, Ingrid Henries, for being with us and for this great discussion. I think we've touched on so many important points that are helpful to understand to our listeners how you came to do what you're doing now and the passion that you display in your work. And I think very helpful to to young people to hear how the various different ways that they can pursue a career in your area or in an area that just simply relates to sustainability in general, you know, whether it's health, as you mentioned, I think with your parents started that. I mean, that's certainly, health is important to sustainability. So there's so many connections here. And as you said, I think being curious is the important thing. I wanted to thank you very much for your time and for being here with us today. And we look forward to more discussions in the future.
Thank you very much. That was my pleasure.
This has been Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast by the Trust for Sustainable Living. Thank you to today's guest, Ingrid Henries. Episode hosted by James Myers. Organised by James Myers. Music by Billy Painter. Find us online by going to trustforsustainableliving.org and join our online community at tsl.earth. Thank you for listening.